Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Today is the 17th of the 4th month, 2025. It is a Thursday evening, ladies and gentlemen. And I am here live in studio. Na, 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 na. Na na no 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 no. In case you missed me, I just wanted to serenade your heart, okay? I wanted to serenade your heart just to let you know Mama's back. Mama's back. Mama was attending to other mother duties. Cause well, my girl got a flu and a cough and it was better her first time, so everything is just popping. So and then it's Lulilwa face. It's like, woo, it's hectic. It's hectic. So ladies and gentlemen, today is Thursday. It is 2200 hours, or let me say 4 minutes past the hour of 10 p.m. If you have just joined us now, when I was just talking now, eh? We're going to be going until 12 midnight. And that is the time for Thursday. So ladies and gentlemen, the number in studio is 083-288-401. That is the number in studio in case you would like to call us, in case you would like to contribute to our conversation tonight. So ladies and gentlemen, tonight we are talking about the soft girl era. Hey, now you're thinking like, what is a soft girl era? Like, is her skin soft, or is she talking in a soft tone, or is she just soft, like weak, like soft, like you say boo, then she starts crying, or you say like, don't do that, and she starts crying. It's like, is she soft? Which, I know, what kind of soft is this? Because it's a Gen Z movement that started in 2019. And it's something that is worth looking at. It's a conversation worth having because there were all these Gen Zs. I kind of just like, defining it, you know, feminine energy, masculinity, and you're like, wow, you guys have this life thing on lock. You guys have like this life thing all figured out or something, man. Like, that's nice. That's really nice. Okay. So what is it? So, it's a Gen Z movement that emerged around 2019, categorized by a deliberate focus on a cuteness. You heard me? A cuteness, feminine aesthetics, and a lifestyle. So it is a lifestyle, darling. So if you hear somebody saying, I just want to be in my soft girl era, it's a lifestyle that they want to be in, you know? It's a feminine aesthetic that they want to be in. It is a cuteness that they want to be in. And I'm like, okay, that is absolutely brilliant. That is absolutely fine. I'm okay with it. Mara, let's just talk about it. So, everything that I've heard around, so before we go to that one, yeah? Ladies and gentlemen, today we're going to do 1 hour of a soft girl era, and we're going to be talking about the soft girl era for 1 hour, and then the next we're going to be having a story time, and then that's how we're going to chila. I'm gonna leave you with a few thoughts, you know, something soft, something cute, something feminine, and then something horrific, eh? And something detrimental, you know, just to keep you woke. You know, we are most 24-hour radio station. We're like a service station here. We don't close. We don't close. So I need to keep you on your toes, you know, just to give you that pizzazz, because we always have something lined up. Just the pizzazz, zazz. So, ladies and gentlemen, with the soft girl era, it is basically everything that I've heard about the soft girl era is a gang of women that are coming forward and saying that, you know what? I just want to be in my soft girl era. I just want to be soft. I want to be gentle. I want to be feminine. I want to have a feminine lifestyle. I want to have a soft lifestyle. Now, when we talk about the softness that they're talking about, it seems as though this softness that they're talking about is just a lifestyle that is catered to by men. This is my thoughts, né? It's a lifestyle that's catered to them by men, and they just bask in the glory, and then they just sit in it, and then they just grovel in it, and then they just turn and toss, and it is a whole mud bath and spa treatments and fingers done and toes done and skin on point and on flick, and it's little mini skirts and booty shorts, and it is elegant dresses here and there. It's garments, you know, doing the thing. And that is my interpretation of what they mean by soft girl era. So I'm thinking that For some people, the soft girl era is really just for aesthetics. It's just for somebody to look very polished, put together, nicely done. And being in the feminine energy, basically what happens is that, being in your feminine energy allows a man to cater to you through everything. So catering to you means that, if you are going, for example, to the shops and you are looking for parking, if being in your feminine energy would say that the car guy is specifically, you know, looking at you and going out of his way, if he's a man, you know, going out of his way to make sure that you get comfortable parking. Like, but it's not like comfortable parking over there. It's like, just hold it. Just stay here while I take care of you, you know? It's that I'm going to take care of you because you are in your feminine energy, and I can feel that femininity. I can feel that softness. I can feel that gentleness, you know, like that. I when I look at you, when I see flowers, and I see clouds, and you know, you just deserve the best, honey. You deserve the best. So the car guard is not going to find you a parking just anywhere. The car guard is going to most probably go out of his way to find you a parking that's closer to the entrance because you deserve better. You know, you are a queen. You're a matriarch like that. So that's somebody being in their feminine energy now. Like if we are putting little twos and twos together because, hey, I'm just saying it's basically putting two and two together. And I'm like, okay, so how are these girls walking in their soft girl energy? How are they in their feminine energy? What is it, this thing of feminine energy? Because we all want to be soft. We all want to be soft. We are also tired of being thugs, you know. We're tired of being gangster. We're tired of being, you know, ooh, a mantla, a way to pass up, chillers out, flop. We are tired. We also want to be like a mandla. Away to a mandla. Away to pass up. Jealous self flop. But I don't know now. Some of us, there by the talking soft, there by the talking soft, maybe we get zero there and not being aggressive in terms of, you know, like, kind of, we are kind of like pit bulls and bulldogs and, you know, Rottweilers. We're kind of like that. We're not poodles. Like, no, we are not poodles. So that is basically what it is to be in your soft girl energy. And you get out of the car and you go into the shops, you grab yourself a trolley, you find a trolley guy there, and he takes one look at you, and he also wipes off your trolley, and then he also gets you a trolley, like the one with the best legs, you know, the one with the best legs, and you're like, oh, thank you. Yeah. I don't know how the soft girls talk, because I'll be like, thank you, man. But soft girls, vati, they have a je ne sais quoi to it. They have like this, to it. Pizzazz, I guess. Or softness, I guess. So the trolley guy gets you a trolley. He wipes it off even, you know. The rest of us are just going there, hands on. You are looking for your own trolley. You are checking your own trolley, you know, because you are must not, you are in your gangster era. You are in your thug era. You are in your Akunta Kinte era. You are not even in your Shaka Zulu era, because you can't even be Nandi Pa. Because unandi, but anyhow, so you get into the shop and then you do your shopping, and let's say there is a product that is on the top shelf and you're a bit on the short side, so you don't, being in your soft girl energy, vati is now standing there and you, like, men just want to help you. I don't know. This is sorcery, guys. This is a witchcraft. But anyhow. So you're standing there and you're like, reaching, you know, you're reaching for the whatever, the Uma biscuits, and they are a bit far. They are up there. And then the shop attendant or the alley guy comes, or even the security guard guy comes, and he helps you, like, you know, let me just take it off for you, mommy. And you're like, oh, thank you. There's a lot of thank you that goes into the soft girl era, né? A lot of thank you, because you're just so feminine. I don't know. Like, is it pretending maybe? Because, like, I don't know. I just feel like, if you can't reach the Oma biscuits, you just go and get, there's usually like a little stool that you just go and get and then you just get it yourself. But in your soft girl era, you don't do that, sis. You wait for a man to come and rescue you from the Oma biscuit scarcity. So yeah. So the guy gives you the Oma biscuits and then you walk around, and this happens throughout the shop for all your products that are too high up. And so you push your trolley, you get to the counter. And you pay for your stuff, and then one of the young boys that are packing plastics, they come to the front, they run, even two of them or three of them come and run. Oh, can we help you, ma'am? You know, if you're a bit on the older side, it's ma'am. And then if you're not, it's like, can we help you? You know? And then they pack your plastics, and then they, can I push the trolley for you? Because now the trolley is apparently so heavy and you can't push your own trolley even though it has wheels. And then you offer them, like, you allow them to kind of just cater to you the way they want to cater to you without you having the need to ask. This is part of it, guys. Hey, when I was reading up on this, I was like, hey, but this one, I don't know how I feel about soft girl energy. If this is soft girl energy, I don't know how I feel about it. I feel like it's very codependent. I feel like it's so waiting for another person. And it's not just waiting for another person. It's just so waiting for a man to come and help you. It's tough. Okay. So you get to the car and this boy is now pushing the trolley for you. And then you're packing the things in the boot. And then the car guide is also ready to just guide you out. And in all of this, nobody's asking you for money. Nobody's even giving you puppy dog eyes to say like, yeah, ma'am, I helped you with your trolley, or I helped you guard your car, or I gave you the best parking. There's no any of that. The gentlemen are just smiling and you're like, thank you so much. You just say thank you. And you can tip them if you want, but in this case, let's say she didn't tip. So she's on that, like, oh, thank you so much. And the gentleman I have, ah, you're welcome, madam. Ah, don't worry, you're welcome. Anytime you come here, just ask for Festus there. You're like, how? Relax, Festus. It's not that deep, but okay. All right, cool beans. So you get home to your life where it seems as though you have a job, or you don't have a job, or your job is a bit in the middle and nobody really knows what you do, but you're pretty. So yeah, it's fine. Whatever you do. So you go and you get home, and also the person that you're living with, your partner, is also a person that wants to help you with things, everything. Like, oh, can I help you take your shoes off? Can I help you take your wig off? You know, can I do things for you? So basically that is the soft girl era from a perspective of some sort, the perspective of going to the shop. So now women have come forward and they are encouraging now other women to get into their feminine energy. But the problem that I have, or what I've heard so far when it comes to feminine energy, is that where people grew up, where people came from, and how they were raised. So there was this particular lady, or there was this particular young lady, that for me there was something that was off about how luxurious she made her life seem. She made it seem Instagram friendly. She made it seem like we just sit here and drink mocktails all day, and you know, men are just catering to us, and we are like matriarchs. I'm like, oh, that's nice. So she talks about coming from a family that had, her mom was at home. So her mom was a housewife, or a stay-at-home mom, and her dad was a provider. So her dad used to go out and get the bacon and bring the bacon home so that mama can fry it. Mama took care of the household, mama took care of the kids, and daddy provided. And this in itself, right, is most now the ideal setting that most women that don't want to work, or don't want yeah, most women that don't want to work, this is ideal for them, right? This is absolutely fine for them, where they don't have a financial contribution to the household. But what I feel like people are failing to talk about is, was your household a happy household? Was it really just roses and water sprinkling from wherever? And was it just clouds? And was it just beautiful rain and thunderstorms? And was it just colorful? Was the whole time, the whole setting there, you've never heard your mom complain about nothing. You've never heard her say anything. And also, I believe that most women that are talking about the soft girl era and incorporating their parents are not necessarily telling us the whole entire story. I feel like they are not going as far back as their lineage should allow. And also they are not talking about the psychological aspect of being a soft girl or being in your soft girl era and the codependency that is birthed from it. So now, it is implied that this man is a superhero and this man is the one that is providing for his family. Now, this concept of providing in the 21st century is a difficult one for the average man to comprehend and to understand and to live by these standards. It's a complicated scenario because in the modern day that we live in contemporary Namibia, right? No average household can survive off of one salary only. Not unless we are pushing it. Not unless we are having budget cuts. Not unless we are somewhere compromising our happiness, compromising our wants, compromising our needs, or compromising the children's needs and wants, or compromising even the dog food. You guys don't even buy dog food anymore. You guys just cook oshimbobo. And then you wait oshimbobo shikulinge down because nobody is buying dog food. Nobody is buying dog food because economy, right? So in contemporary Namibia, I don't believe, or contemporary times, I don't believe a one income household is actually feasible, or a one income household is actually something that actually works. I believe that, yay, if we can have 3 incomes, if we can have 20 incomes, it would even be better. But, so now, the image that these girls are giving is that you as a man must be a provider. You as a man must be the guy that is bringing home the bacon, and I must sit and I must cook the bacon, but I'm also taking care of the children and I'm taking care of the household. Now we're going to jump to the other side a little later, but let's talk about it. Let's talk about, are you as a man in current times actually capable financially of sustaining a woman, children, dogs, and the whole entire household? Can your salary actually do that? And how many are you guys that can? Because I do not believe, for an ounce within my body, I do not believe that an average man, and I'm not talking about you that makes a couple of figures more than the figures that the rest of us make. I'm talking about you. I'm talking about us, the ones that make the figure that you don't make, Wena. Because there's probably some rich guy that's listening to me on his app right now, and he's sitting in the office, you know, making the millies. And he's like, yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely possible because I'm living proof that I'm a testimony that this is actually possible, matriarch. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know why you're misleading these young men. But sir, when are your basic salaries at 60 plus K in 1 month? No. The average Namibian is below 10. We are not even taxable. Naira is not coming for us. Hey, Minister of Finance is not even coming for us. On our tax certificates, they write there, not eligible for tax. Not eligible for tax because, hey, what are we taxing you? There's already nothing here. What are we taxing you? And that is the average Namibian. The average Namibian is getting something like 7 to 8K, 9K, 10K. And that is what they make. Then there's rent, then there's car expenses, the children, there's all these expenses. So I believe that the girls that are living in the soft girl era, they are most probably living in the soft girl era for the guys that are living in their blow up era. They are living in their glow up era. They are living in their area, their era of a breakthrough. Because I don't think for a second that if you were nah, you are in your startup and stabilizing era, you can actually afford to have a whole wife that is just sitting at home every day taking care of the household. And the reason that I'm not undermining a housewife's chores and job is because it is actually a job. It is actually difficult. It is draining. It messes with your mind to an extent, ne? Just staying with kids, especially if your children are small. Like, eh, the conversations you have with a 1-year-old, guys. Gabi, 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 gabi. And this person thinks that they're having a whole conversation, but you have to encourage them to keep talking until they learn how to talk. And you must just be speaking straight words, you know? You can't be baby languaging also. You must be speaking straight words so that the person can learn how to talk, actually. But imagine that's your everyday life. That's a bit difficult, man. Even I need an escape to go to work. I can't wait to go to work because I'm like, wow. I love the kids, but who? So now when we are talking about this era, or when we're talking about the men that the soft girl is intending to attract, or the men that the soft girl is with, I don't believe that it is for the faint-hearted or for it. I don't believe that the soft girl era, Gen Z movement is something that was created for an average Namibian man. I don't believe that. And I also believe that these are the pressures that men face. These are the standards to which they have to live by in order to satisfy the egos of a woman, the thoughts of a woman, and also the movements that these women come up with that are very much unrealistic and also put a burden on the men, because it's a burden. It's a burden to provide. And this providing is not just extended to financial providing. It is also, you must be emotionally available. You must be emotionally intelligent. You must also be, I don't know, physically strong, you know, to beat up robbers. Because if you are living with a woman that is in her soft girl era and thugs come through to break in, do you think that this girl that's in her soft girl era is also the type of girl that says, "Kucha, babe, here's the bat, let's go. You know, let's protect our kids." Or is she part of the kids that are also being protected by you? And if you are not capable of protecting her like that, then does that now not change the image of you that she created in her mind? These are questions, guys. These are questions. You guys can come through. The number in studio is 083-288-401. Because I believe that you guys have to talk about these things. I believe that we all have to talk about these things, because many of us are falling prey to new movements, because we are all trying to somewhere, somehow escape our lives. We are trying to escape the lives that we are having right now by creating new external lives that we want to live by. And it's absolutely okay for you to want to be in your feminine energy, especially if you're doing it for the correct reasons. Like, you know, I've had situations where I had to thug it out for a long time, and I don't want to be thugging it out anymore. I want somebody else to take care of me. It's absolutely fine if that's what you want, but I don't believe that it is something that we should now place onto a man's plate, as if being a man is not already a burden on its own, as if it's not a liability on its own. Now, you have to place these ideas or ideology that you have of what a man is supposed to do while you are going through your soft girl era, and he must live up to these standards. And we don't even wait for the knowledge cutty guys to come and get you. You know, you just start here with Philemon. You start here with Philemon, like, I want to be in my soft girl era, and I want to be in my soft girl era with you, Philemon. And Philemon is like, how? You're quitting your job? Like, yeah. Like, I'm in my soft girl era. I just want to be taken care of. Like, how? Hey, how? So she just starts behaving funny, and then she leaves the job. Or she gets fired because she's acting funny at work, and then she is apparently looking for a job, and then you automatically become the sole provider of the household, and you didn't bargain for it, you didn't sign up for it, you didn't talk about it, nothing happens, but you also can't kick her out because, well, she did not fire herself, and you don't work at her workplace so that you can know that she was behaving badly, that's why she got fired. So it's not even like that. So I believe that this is an unrealistic expectation that women have towards the gentleman that they're in relationships with. So now, part of the soft girl era is that there's a movement of the girls that grew up in a two-parent household, and then there's the movement of the girls that grew up in a one-parent household or no parents at all, and these girls are now conflicted, or they are basically having this back and forth where the girls that come from two-parent households are bashing the ones that are in their soft girl era, but they come from a single-parent household. Because apparently the girls that grew up with a mother, single mother, single father, they don't know how to be in their feminine energy because they have been in survival mode the entire time. They have been in this vicious cycle of I have to fend for myself, I have to ground myself, I have to do things for myself because I only have one parent. But what I'm failing to understand with this narrative or this concept is that, does that now mean, right, that you that grew up in a two-parent household is better than the one that grew up in a one-parent household simply because both your parents were there? And even if both your parents were there, Is it not necessary for you to tell us the ins and the outs of the relationship that you are basically putting on a pedestal right now? You're putting it on a pedestal where we can't take it off because we don't know the ins and the outs of it. And then the other girls are labeled as forcing their soft girl era because they don't know how to be soft, because they don't know how to be taken care of by men. Are we together, guys? Are we together? If we are together, please do call in and then we can talk about it. I really honestly feel like this is a conversation that we need to have, because maybe, just maybe, you can also look at Mugirl a little differently. You can also look at Mugirl and think, Kucha, and ask her, are you in your soft girl era? Like, are you in your feminine energy? Like, which energy are you in? Like, brur, like, where are you at? Because the way you're burning through money is as if, like, yo, like, yeah, burning through money, soft girl era, spa treatment, and it is shopping at Grove, it is Yango here and there, and it is just. I don't even want to learn how to drive because I'll have a driver. How? So the cars must just rot. So now the problem that I have with the girls that come from a two-parent household is that they're not really talking about their parents' relationship. And I believe that if we are going to put our lives out into the public, if we are going to go out there and advise on anything, then we must come with truths. We must come with not just truths, but realistic, very realistic examples of our own lives to put onto the table to verify this concept that we are coming with. Because we can't just mislead, right? We can't just tell somebody, like, I'm in my soft girl era, like, we're doing soft things. Soft. We can't just do that because there is a misinterpretation and there is also a twist to things when we put them out there. So, all right. So what was the relationship like? I feel like many of many of our girls, they don't talk about it. So, okay, so your dad was the provider and your mom was a stay-at-home mom. Was your mother happy about being a stay-at-home mom? That is the first question. Was your mother happy about being a stay-at-home mom? Because also when we look at the ins and outs of the financial situation that we are facing as a country even, if we are looking at the financial situation in which we are in, one would believe that as a human being, there are certain things that are a little somewhat, not degrading. You would only think that it's degrading if you come from a place where you had to fend for yourself. It is just providing in a two-parent household. Fati, it is just providing. But my question is, when your menstruation comes, you as a woman, you as a kept woman, you know, like, ooh, my wife is a kept woman. Sounds so attractive. It sounds like a trophy. Like, ooh, baby. I also want to be a kept woman. My question is, when your menstruation comes, that monthly cycle that happens to you fertile women, eh? When that comes and you don't have a dollar to your name, do you go and ask your husband to give you $12 for a packet of pads? And how does that make you feel as a person? Or have you figured out the system so much so that you never have to ask for pads because the money that is given as an allowance or as a payment, I don't know, like as a salary or as an A or something that you're given there at home. Do you just save it enough in order for you to always budget your periods as part of it? Always budget your feminine hygiene products as part of it, or always budget your things in accordance to that, to those wages that you are getting? Like, do you make it a point like that? Or is it really one of those, like, is that what we're doing? And is that like classified as, oh, soft girl? Like, oh, she's in her feminine energy. Or is it one of those things where he must just know that you menstruate and he must just buy the pants? Or what goes on there? So those are the questions that I would like soft girls to come through and explain. I would like the soft girls, the ones that are in their feminine energy, the ones that are, you know, within, you know, living life and going through their soft girl era. I want them to come and explain those things. I want to know about your parents' situation. So was your mom always happy when she had absolutely nothing? And if your dad was ever in a mood and didn't want to give anything, That was it. And was she always happy with that? Because we do all have good days and bad days. And even if we are saying that, no, we are going to be in our soft girl area and we are going to be provided for, the reason that there is a movement of gender equality, the reason that there is a feminist movement, the reason that women are so hell-bent and adamant about not being under the thumbs of men is because men have a tendency of degrading women, like messing with their dignity, messing with their ego, messing with their self-respect and self-confidence, self-esteem. They have a tendency of doing that when they are in control of the money. And that is why even when we had our conversation with Uloya last week, right? Part of the problem when we are talking about divorces in the country is the fact that most people don't want to leave because financially they just can't. So now it would be, if you are ever going to go onto the internet, if you're like a grammar or a YouTuber or whatever, and you are going to be welcome to my channel, you know, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Matriarchs channel. And you're talking about soft girl era. Would it not be appropriate for you to tell us the ins and the outs of your parents' marriage, because you are basing your whole entire current situation on or current thought or current era in which you are stepping into on the basis of their relationship. Now, is it because we didn't hear the fights that were happening? Because even if you guys are married for a couple of years, we all know that everybody fights. It's just a matter of how we fight, right? Everybody fights. Whether it is, I'm not talking to you today, whether it's we're talking extremely loud, whether it's we are giving each other passive aggressive vibes, fights are fights and they are common within relationships. So how did your parents fight and what did they fight about in order for us to make this decision of, because I also want to step into my soft girl era, but I'm kind of skeptical about everything because how you guys are not explaining anything. So your mother was a stay-at-home mother. Oh, okay, so where'd she get the money for pads? If she wanted to run to the shop, did she have to call your dad? Did your dad leave a credit card? Did your dad leave a card there so that she can use whenever? And did it have a limit? And did he used to come back and audit her? You know, like, because we need to know, because this is not the office of the opposition leader, where we don't know where the money goes. Auditing, no auditing. It's just taxpayer money. This is not like that. So I want to know, is it a situation where your dad calls like, yo, so you swipe $20 at okay, what was the $20 for? Or is it one of those things where he's just loving his wife and then he just gives her this card that is just unlimited and you can just go and swipe and I will not ask you, or what was the relationship? Because many of us, especially children, right, we have a tendency of romanticizing our parents because they are our first line of defense. And also, not just being our first line of defense, they are our first heroes, our first role models, our first anything. They are our first heartbreaks, first disappointment. It's them. Everything good and everything bad comes from the images that we have of them, the things that they did within our lives. Everything. They are the ones that set the tone for the rest of our lives. So I believe that it is intentionally being soft by being vulnerable about the truth about the relationship. And I'm not talking about bad truths, right? I'm talking about truths are truths. So if there is like, no, my dad was a very chilled guy, or my dad is a very chilled guy. He basically didn't care about money things. So my mom had a card and that's basically just how she did it. We've never heard them argue. These are the things that we need to hear. We've never heard them argue. We've never heard them argue about money. There has never been financial issues and. Because this particular young lady that I'm talking about went on to say that, there was a time that she went out on a date with a particular young boy as well. It was those 18, 19 starting to date things, and then she went out on a date, and I'm guessing that there's a card that she has that the parents have access to, because when she got back from her date and the first thing that her parents asked is, did you pay for the meal? Did you pay for the food? Did you pay for the date? And she got in trouble because she paid for the date. And now I would be asking, so since there's only one provider in the household and he has now track record of the expenses that people have because it's his money, right? So he keeps tabs on the finances or what? So I like it's such an interesting conversation. And when you hear so many people's narratives and so many people's ideas around the concept of soft girl, right? I believe that you would get to understand it, and then you get to ask more questions. And right now, this lady said that no, she's in her soft girl era. She's in her soft girl era and she recently quit her job. So I was like, oh, okay. So what happened? And she said that no, apparently she was just very unhappy at work, and her partner, boyfriend, not husband, not fiance either, just boyfriend. Her boyfriend saw that she was just unhappy with the job. And then when she quit, she had no money. So she had to leave everything to just go and stay with him. And he's the one that's providing for everything. I'm like, our son's suffering or our daughter are our daughters delusional? I don't know. Because I feel like it is abuse. I feel like men are suffering at the hands of women and women are sugarcoating and wrapping it in pretty paper to make it seem like it is okay. And the more women jump onto the notion or to the movement, then it seems more okay to be like that. But when I look at soft girl era and I look at all these definitions around soft girl era and femininity, right? I don't hear anything about being grounded in your religion and, you know, being a woman of substance and virtue. I don't see any of that. What I see per our definition, right? It's categorized by being deliberately cute. So deliberately cute means that you are intentionally making sure that you are cute and you look cute. So now when we are talking about you are cute and you look cute, is that not then described as the art of seduction? Is that not seducing the opposite gender? Because I wouldn't call it an energy. I wouldn't call it femininity. I would not call it a soft girl era movement. I would say it is intentionally making yourself presentable enough and attractive enough according to your standards of cuteness. So in order for you to seduce a man, to manipulate him into doing exactly what you want. Crazy, isn't it? It's like, what? Yeah. Is it leaving that rough taste in your mouth? Like, well, I'm like, aye. And also, we have to also talk about the well-kept. Does this not then mean that you as a woman must be well-kept and you must be well-maintained and you must have a pretty aura to you, or you must be pretty? Now, if we are talking about well-kept, right, in this current state that we are in, ladies and gentlemen, we've got 50% unemployed. If you want to look cute, you have to look nice. How many of us can afford to look the way we want without spending money? Because if you want to look good in your face, you have to buy your makeup, you have to buy your eyeshadow, your eyeliner, you have to go and get your lashes done. That is most now the beauty standards, right? In terms of cosmetology, those are the beauty standards. Makeup, lashes, you know, artificial stuff. You have microblading. You have all of this stuff. And if we are looking at it, where are you getting the money in order for you to become cute and pretty? If you are living in your soft girl era that doesn't actually have money because you are expecting a man from my house to come and cater to you, to make you and put you past standard. So prior to that, what are you doing? Are you living in your ugly girl era, or are you fighting for your pretty girl and soft girl era? Is that what we're doing? And also, does that now not leave the gap, right, of the gap of women using men to get what they want? And this using, I'm talking about money using. I'm talking about straight up prostitution. Is it not prostitution if somebody is basically being in a relationship with you, fornicating with you in order for you to give them finances, in order for them to become cute and to live within their soft girl era. There's this soft girl era thing that we are putting to the forefront. These Gen Zs that are putting this to the forefront. Is that not another disguise to encourage prostitution for those that don't actually have the means to go into their cuteness era, into their feminine era, and into their aesthetic, feminine aesthetics, right? And lifestyle of feminine energy. Because if you're going to be in a lifestyle of feminine energy, right, you have to be having plans, you have to have a great phone, and you have to have a great YouTube channel. Now, where are you going to find it? You that's living in the ghetto? You that doesn't have no future prospects? You that doesn't have nothing going on for you? Especially, except maybe a hot body and a face, an ID, you know. Some girls are really, really pretty with or without makeup, because makeup is a choice. Makeup is like wearing a hat. It's just like a wig. It's wearing a hat. If you feel like it, you feel like it. If you don't, you don't. Then there are those that don't feel comfortable without, and there are those that don't feel comfortable with. We don't judge women's cosmetic choices. We are talking about the issue at hand. So now, if our young girls are living in a phase where we are jumping into things like soft girl era, and the reason for being in our soft girl era is because we have been living in survival mode this whole entire time. And survival mode is classified as basically coming out of a one parent household where you had to fend for yourself in one way or another. Fend for yourself is not necessarily just financial, but it is finding your own emotional stability, finding your own psychological stability, finding a way to go through the current of having only one parent, as if that is very, 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 very bad. Because, I mean, you know, whatever they're saying. Is this not an encouragement? Is this soft girl era movement that the Gen Z started? Is it not a hoax? Is it not maybe, just maybe, a little theory that we are running with that could turn out to be detrimental? Because it encourages to some degree prostitution. So now we don't know why our children are so prone to seeking out these rich guys, to seeking out these guys that want love but don't have the kind of finances to source somebody's lifestyle choice. And now our men are aggravated, and they are tired and frustrated, and they are tapping into an aggressive spirit, an aggressive tone, an aggressive undertone that's just lingering inside there, because the women are not playing fair. I'm asking. And also, when we are talking about manipulation, wouldn't we say that manipulation within the soft girl era would be something like being feminine enough to seduce you and leaving you high and dry after I get what I want? So I come here and I'm in my feminine energy, you know? Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station. I'm a bit wheezy today, so I would just like, you know, all of you guys to call through and just, you know, make me feel better. Is that not maybe, just maybe, manipulating the system in such a way that I'm just being feminine and I'm being soft and I'm coming forward and I've got a little tone to it, you know, a demeanor to it. And then I manipulate you into believing that you are obligated by virtue of your genitalia, right? You are obligated to come forward and serve me as the goddess I am, simply because of nothing else, zero merit, just my genitalia alone. Is that not manipulation? So now you find your son that you put through school, ma'am. You put through school and this son of yours is just chasing this girl, man. She's chasing this girl that's doing nothing. Has like never helped him with anything. Him, he can be going to the funeral of his father and this girl will be like, you know, I just want to support you. So I'll come with you, but no, not even a but. I'll come with you to support you. And then when this girl comes to support the boyfriend at your house, ne? This girl is not waking up for nothing. Your son is waking up in the morning like a bedinda. He's waking up in the morning to make her hot water because, you know, she can't burn her pretty nails and she can't get down and dirty. And you are watching your son that you raised, to be a good man, a man that is served, a man that is dignified. And this woman is just living in a soft girl era. And apparently she's just like, yeah, that's just not, it's not. Or which things are feminine, Danone? Like, are we saying that building rooms is not feminine? Or carrying bricks is not feminine? Or what is it? What is this femininity that everybody is fighting for and everybody is searching at the bottom of the barrel to find a sense of gratification from? Ladies and gentlemen, I want to know, when you hear soft girl era, don't you picture a girl in high heels, a Gucci bag, and a really small skirt and shades and Brazilian stort beristera? Is that not your image? When I say soft girl era, is that not what you're picturing? Are you not picturing some girl in the club with your father? Because the only man that can accommodate the girl that's in the soft girl era is a man that has built his money. Not you, the young man that is just getting papa now. You are only getting to the point where your breakthrough is most probably coming in 3 years. Not you. So that's why the girl is now with your father. And your father is all over the floor taking pictures for the gram for her. Hey. And your mother has never seen a 5-star hotel in her life, but this girl has seen a 5-star hotel times 10 in 10 different countries with your father, and she's just living her soft girl era. Are we not looking at that? And last but not least, we're talking about, does the soft girl era not go against the moral of independence? I understand that we want to be taken care of. We want to be loved. We want to be appreciated. There's nobody on this green earth planet that doesn't want to be loved and appreciated. Even the narcissists, even the psychopaths, even the sociopaths, they want to be loved and to be admired. Even serial killers want to be loved and admired. They get a thrill from it. Guys like Ted Bundy, guys that could get any girl, they just pull up on some old school Bobby and his whole crew. We're showing up like, baby, we will come through. The game got us all locked, doing what you want. If you ain't got at least a couple fans, then you ain't cool, right? The likes of Ted, you know, Ted just says, do you want to ride? And women are falling and dripping. Drip, 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 drip. Drip is permanent. And still, their choice of that, their drug of choice is this one. It's just not you women, but it's this one. So everybody wants to be loved and everybody wants to be appreciated. But does that not go through that? Does that not go against the code of independence? And are we not fighting for independence of some sort? Are we not fighting to create people that are independent? Even if it's just independent in terms of finances or independent in terms of self. Because even if she's living in her soft girl era, you intentionally don't want to work. I get it. But are you not doing anything else that you love, that you like? Is there nothing else on this green earth that makes you want to get out of bed? It's only your family. I understand that family is very important. I understand that marriage is important. I understand that, like and love is important. I understand that. But we as individuals, we need to learn how to be individuals. And the soft girl era has a tendency, or it has this eluding ambiance that is sitting on top of it. It's like stardust. It's like a dust that came to settle and nobody wiped it off. It's sticky. it leaves this illusion that we are normalizing the concept of codependency. Now, codependency, we have seen it as bad as it is, but we have not associated it to people, for example. We've not associated it to people, and that is why we're not really looking at it from the theory of people, because we look at codependency in other areas and we give it a different name. So when we look at, growing up, or not growing up per se, but throughout my life, when I've heard of Mme Fonseka, there were words that were said that, you know, and she's a stallion, you know, she can see things and she just knows where things are. And she's like, yo, brah, everybody in my village knew Fonseca. Everybody in the nearby villages knew Fonseca. Now, part of her issue that she was talking about on Stop Suffering Today was the fact that she had a drinking problem and then she had a gambling problem. Now, when we call those gambling and drinking problems to the table, we call them addictions. But is codependency not an addiction to another human being? And are we not breeding and brewing a beer of codependency? Are we not breeding a codependent generation, a codependent Gen Z generation of women that are now going to drain our sons and going to set the notion of you must be a provider in a country that does not allow you to be a provider because the country is still growing in so many aspects. And it's not everybody. It's a 1% that has real money. And the rest of us are just out here. Soon I'll be part of the 1% and I'll leave you guys, you know, but it's okay. It's okay. Don't cry for me. I'll be happy there. Don't cry for me. I'm not going to suffer. I'll be happy there. But, right? We need to look at these things and critically analyze it. We need to analyze it in such a way that somewhere, somehow along the way, we will need to snap out of things and stop labeling things fancy names. Stop giving them these attractive, beautiful names that linger in the air and the ambience in corridors of unspoken words. We should stop normalizing bad things, because when we normalize bad things now, in the next 10 years, we are going to have a pandemic, right? Of one, it's women that don't want to do nothing. And it's not just women that don't want to do nothing. It's young women that don't want to do nothing, that are putting a psychological burden onto our sons to provide for them. And then they are not even worthy of being provided to, because if we are taking it back to ancient times, because everybody wants to talk about ancestors and back in the day, to be honest, the women of nowadays, the women of nowadays don't really deserve the whole, chivalry that comes with, I'm a perfect gentleman and I'm a provider. Because if I was a man, the only person I would provide for is a virgin. Yeah, because at least I know nobody has been there. Eh? Now you are providing to a person that has run the streets with a body count of 75. And now she wants to pressurize you to be perfect and to fit into her box. And her box is killing you because you actually can't. You don't need a liability. What you need, sir, is a partner. You need a partner to go through life with. You need a partner to contribute in one way or another. And especially in these times, you need her to contribute financially. You need her to at least be financially stable so that everything that you are doing for her is not an obligation but a gift. So if you're going to buy a Rolex for your wife, It's absolutely fine as long as she didn't force you to buy a Rolex. As long as she's not crying because all her friends have Rolexes. As long as she's not manipulating you into believing that soft girls deserve Rolexes. I'm just saying. So ladies and gentlemen, that leaves us at the end, that puts us at the end of our first segment. We're going to be taking calls after the break, so please stay tuned.
Mukungulele kwa tuko maikuto wa mina apiri kwa mavuchaziva. Muvele kisema app ato kasi nchavu kamso. Zakare riferire. Mise kunani zencha. Kuzwa kwa kushimba rifera zalivuka kuya kwa rifasi la rifera fama kepe. Muvone maikuto amancha a imba app. Mwikutwe kulimusi emba santo ye nguyetuna. Mwikole sifera fama kepe marizo hola mina. Hamuvone. Imba encha ni encha farizwe ikopanya mifuta ya rifera matasa app ilini kukopanya naha ni kuhasa nyali nzwira mlimu. Zengwi zefu mani hamasifera sesifa app ya imba kize tatama. Elsin, ehangano, oshiherero, omaemuriro, Catholic, smane kakarunga, Africans, ni zengwi zengata. Mululi zeze kachenu, haiva mtavera kulisfera sa kereke ya mina, si ekezwe fa mkoloko wa lifera za imba, fa 081-235-8063, kapa mulumere imele kwa digital@omalighty.com. Muzive ni kufuma na imba kachenu, mkona kufuma na fa App Store ni Google Play Store.
Did you know that in Namibia over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Siwanasa Namibia, kamberera omwakarunga koe pamwe na imba. Inokara uri kwa nima yesiga. Endera pamwe nethimbo muyuni wa technology. Imonena eimbiro joe mwene kongo dhiyo peke pamwe na imba. Imba oteta pamwe oshiwana no kwanja kakaneka onjimbo moshiwana ashihe sha Namibia. Moka epa ka imba otamu adhika ehwata jo onjimbo dho ongereka dhayoroka. Gashi, ehangano ja Elsin, umaimburiro joshiherero, simane kakarunga ja katolika karoma, joshimburu sang fuartier no ongereka dhimwe. Tudengera nena ngere wapumba omaimbiro ongereka yoe gakarega wevako. Koka epa ka imbako nora hetatu imwe mbarindatu tano hetatu nora hamano datu. Nenge ututumine o email ko digital@omalighty.com. Otovuruku adha oka epa ka imbako App Store noko Google Play Store. Imo nena imbagoe nena.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsin Ehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Africans Sung for Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-235-8063. You can also email us at digital@omalighty.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Shiwanasha Namibia. Kamberera omwa karunga koe pamwe na imba. Inokara uri kwa nima yesiga.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. So, ladies and gentlemen, we were most now talking about the soft girl era, which is a Gen Z movement, eh, guys? Which is a Gen Z movement that emerged in 2019, around 2019 there. And it's categorized by deliberately focusing on your cuteness and feminine aesthetics and the lifestyle. So basically, that feminine energy is the energy that we were talking about. And like, because when I think about my gangster, can we all be in our feminine energy? By chance, like, wow. First of all, we can't say by chance if we are in our feminine energy. We must have to say, like, yo, ladies. I guess the whole concept of feminine energy, when I look at the feminine energy aspect, I think of it as the art of seduction. I feel like it is the art of seducing men into believing or giving them this illusion that you are worthy and deserving of everything and they are supposed to cater for this. But I don't know now if we are breeding the kind of females that we want to leave behind, because isn't that somewhere along the lines of manipulation, pretty privilege, you know, and does it not stand against the concept of independent women, etc., etc.? But, we close it off. The number in studio is 083-288-401 in case you would like to call in case you would like to contribute to that part of the conversation, in case you would like to buzz us up. That is the number. But we are moving on to story time. So our show today is cut into two sections. I wanted to talk about the soft girl era because the concept of the soft girl era, or the fight between the girls that are in the soft girl era, is basically the one of you are not worthy of being in the soft girl era because you didn't grow up in a two-parent household. So you, my dear, are basically forcing it. That is what I've seen on the internet. Which are, the girls are like bashing it. Like, yeah, your daddy ran away. So you can't really be in your soft girl era because you've had to live in survival mode. And what if my daddy died? So I had to live in survival mode. What about you that had a daddy around, but your daddy was never around? Like, your mom did everything. So are we not the same? Was your mom not a single married woman? You know, a single mom that's married. And like, because I feel like we are not talking about the relationships that our parents actually had when we are talking about these little theories or these little lifestyles that we want to start. We're not talking about where our parents were, what they were coming from, how they were going about it. And we're not talking about the trials and tribulations that they had to face. We're not talking about the technicalities behind things. Because if you are a stay-at-home mom that is just, you know, taken care of, do you ask? Now, tate nkhona kucha, tate, upatekso apuapo, so... It's that time of the month, so ningakutare we ako pick and pay, ningakutare ko vuma mbroka. Like, are those things that happened in the household? And also, did we did we actually have conversations with our parents before we started believing that we are going to step into the soft girl era and we are just going to put these pressures on men to provide. Men must provide. Men must provide. Men must provide. In an economy such as this one, where a two income household is a thing, a two income relationship is a thing, a two income situationship, friends with benefits, is also a thing. And now we're saying that no. I'm in my soft girl era. You must provide. So is that not putting pressure on men? And does it not build frustration within these gentlemen to become aggressive, to become frustrated, to become not so happy? Or do we not care about their happiness? It's just our own happiness that matters. Those are just questions that I'm asking. So if you're going through your soft girl era, and you would like to talk about it and explain it better, because I'm not in my soft girl era. I'm in my thug era. I'm in my gangster era. I'm in my mom era. I'm in like that one, like the, yeah. I'm in the, if robbers come to jump us, we are jumping them together. Also, we are jumping them back. Yeah. I'm in that one, like where we are raising voices. Yeah, we are all, yeah, we are in that one. If it's survival mode, then it's survival mode. But apart from that, we are in that one. So for those that are in their soft girl eras, please do come through and tell us about your soft girl era so that we can understand, because we just see your skin glowing and we just see spa treatments and we just see, you know, going to movies on weekdays without the kids. You know, we just see that and we're like fascinated because we can't do that because we are going to work and we don't live on the gram. And even if you do live on the gram, are you getting paid? Yeah. Is monetizing? Are you getting paid? Just want to know. Asking for a friend. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Storytime with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a story about, this is a twisted story where we're going to be talking about someone. So the thing is that I forgot all the village names. Hey, I tried my best as I was reading through these cases. I tried my best and I realized that the numbers and the names, they are way too many for me to remember for this evening. So today we're going to assume that the story that I'm telling tonight is fictional, or yeah, we're going to assume that it's fictional, but it is actually a true life story. So most of us come from, picture this, you come from a village somewhere in wherever, whichever part of Namibia, there is a village, right? So now, when you think of the cemetery in your village, you don't think of strangers being buried there. You don't think of people that are not from your village being buried there. So 90% or 99.99999% of the people that are buried in the cemetery in your village are all from your village. They are all deceased people from the village, from your village. So once upon a time, there was this guy and he lived like in a smaller town or in a smaller village, and he was looking for survival and he was looking for a job. And one day he was sitting in a bar and he was having his ale. He was having his beer, and he started a conversation with a guy named Wizard. Now, Wizard was working in a nearby village or in a nearby town, and he had a job vacancy. So what are the odds? So they're sitting there and they're drinking, because you have to have conversations with people that you're drinking with, or you have to have conversations when you are going out there or something like that. So they had a conversation and this guy is like, yo, so I don't have a job right now and I'm struggling. So I don't know what I'm going to do with my life and the economy, and I don't also have like deep qualifications and it's just crazy. And this guy is like, no, the thing is that I work in another town. We'll call this town Hawaii. Yeah, we'll call this town Hawaii because I don't want to give names and then you are going to be like, oh, no. So we'll say that, no, I work, the other guy, Wizard, is like, I don't know, I work in Hawaii and, there is a vacancy at where I work. So maybe I can give you the job and maybe we can go and, we can go tomorrow if you are willing. The guy's like, ah, no, no problem. So I'll just pack up my things because there's nothing for me here. I came from another town. I've just been jumping from town to town and village to village just looking for uhupiro. So there's nothing really here for me. So tomorrow morning, where are we meeting? And the wizard is like, no, we're going to meet at the bus stop in the morning and be there by 7:30 because the bus leaves at 8:00. And this guy, we'll call him Raj. And Raj is like, no, I'll be there 7:30. My dear, 6:30, an hour early. Raj was already standing there at the bus stop with his backpack and he was ready to go. So he waited for Wizard and Wizard came like at 7:00 and then they waited for the bus. The bus was there at approximately 7:30 and they got onto the bus and then they left. So they got into the next town where Wizard had promised Raj a job. And they get dropped off in town and then they get a taxi and they get dropped off at this place. So now this place has like trees and it has, it's nice. It's nice looking, but he doesn't know. Raj doesn't know most now where this place of employment is. And they didn't really talk about this place of employment. They just talked about, no, there's a job. And he's like, yeah, man, I'm willing to do anything, man. I'm willing to dig graves, bruh. Like, Times are hard. My family is suffering and struggling. Times are hard. Okay, cool. So they get there and Kanti, where they get is a cemetery. Now, Raj was a bit skeptical. He was like, ooh, scary. Like, cemetery? Like, really? But okay, so what do we do at the cemetery? Before he was like, before I get myself spooked out, let me just ask Wizard, Kucha, what do we do at the cemetery? Are we digging graves? Are we carrying coffins? What exactly are we going to be doing here as our job at the cemetery? Or what do you do here at the cemetery? And no, Wizard runs him through that. No, I am literally just a manager. I'm literally just taking care of the cemetery. There's nothing that I do. I just water the plants and I water the graves and I just take care of the graves and I make sure that none of the graves are being vandalized and basically just run through the cemetery now and then. And basically it's just the upkeep of the cemetery. And there's a little cottage on the other side and it's a 2-bedroom and it's nice. And we have TV, we have Wi-Fi, you know, Wi-Fi is an important thing. TV, we have Wi-Fi, we have food also. There's a fridge. We can, you know, like we can survive, you know, and also I'm going to be paying you $3,000. So from, like the salary in itself is 3,000. So he's like, yo, okay, 3,000? All good. Let's do this. So he starts getting acquainted with the place and the procedure. So at night, they just go and take a walk around the fence to make sure that there's nobody that is trying to cut the fence to walk through the cemetery at night. There's nobody that's coming to do rituals in the middle of the night at the cemetery. Or they just take a walk through the cemetery to make sure that the perimeter around the cemetery is fine. Because, you know, we've also heard of people vandalizing people's graves. And braying at their enemies' graves, you know, having parties at their enemies' graves. We've heard about these things, you know. So they were just making sure that these things are not happening. This was their job. Like, oh, okay. And Raj was pretty happy. He says that some nights, you know, Wizard would just disappear or Wizard would just kind of just wander off into the night and he would come back like after a couple of hours and he would just be covered in mud, like draping in mud. And he didn't really pay any mind to it. But he's like, No, it used to happen. So this wizard guy would just go, and then he comes back like draping in mud, like dirty from head to toe, everything. He's just dirty in mud. But okay, Raj is like, but the job was good. You know, I'm watching TV, it's hot water. I'm okay. I guess nah, I guess sharp. Like, I'm not about to jeopardize my job because some guy goes and plays in the mud sometimes. No. And I'm not going to ask him either. So they continued coexisting. So now when you live in a place like that, or for those that have lost loved ones, right? You know that there's this sense of death that lingers when you bury your loved one. So 90% of us usually go back to the grave after we've buried our loved ones. You know, we go back to the grave to say our final goodbyes because maybe at the funeral there was too much that was happening and we were disassociated or dazed or thrown aback or pushed aback and we couldn't really comprehend what was happening up until the dust has settled, which is approximately maybe 2 to 3 days afterwards. So usually people would go back to the cemetery to just say their final goodbyes. Now the complaint that was there was that the graves, right, were tampered with to some degree. You know, when you've left something at the grave on the day of the burial and then you come back and it's moved or it's not nice. It's put somewhere. It's just, there's just something that's giving you, kucha. There's something that's off here. And it happened a lot. You know, it happened a lot. It's like, okay, so every time somebody is buried, you know, every time somebody is buried, when the relatives come back, the grave was just tampered with. And also, this is something that has happened, like within a Muslim community, it was in Pakistan. So with the Muslims, due to religious beliefs, right? Many of them water graves due to religious beliefs. I think it is for the afterlife because they don't bury their deceased in anything that is made out of fire, because it is said that when crossing over to the afterlife, it hinders that. So it's like you burn when you're going to the afterlife or something like that. So they don't use man-made things. And part of their process is also apparently to water the graves. So part of the rituals that the families would come and do, because it was mainly a Pakistani or mainly a Muslim area, they would come and water the graves of their deceased. And they would now notice that the cloth that they put over the grave, for example, was not there. Or it was moved. And you know, when dealing with a grave, right? You wouldn't put weak stones. If you're putting a cloth, you would put most a cloth and strong stones to hold the cloth. Now, you come there and you are thinking, even if it was raining, this rock wouldn't have moved. Even if it was windy, this rock wouldn't have moved. So why is this cloth just, you know, dangling? It's not the way we left it as a family in Kwetu. But people were like, yo. So there are some reports of people that had walked past the cemetery at night, and then they noticed like flashlights in the cemetery, and they've noticed like a lot of movement in the cemetery all of a sudden, and they said that they come from a superstitious place, so they said that no, maybe there are ghosts in the cemetery, Anuashituka, and stuff like that. So it was a no-go area, it was a no-go zone. Nobody really talked about it, but they were definitely displeased with the fact that the graves were being tampered with. So part of that tampering was now the idea that the dead were coming back to life. Now people were like, ah, but In our family, we don't do that. In our family, atushituka. In our family, hatenana. In our family, is not, yeah. So that was the uproar that was going on within the community. So, Wizard and Raj were basically the gatekeepers there, and they were asked, they were not, you know, nobody asked them any questions. Nobody asked them any questions. Nobody ever saw them. They just knew that there are gatekeepers there at the cemetery that close the cemetery, that open the cemetery in the morning. And they also do rounds like upkeep. And they are also being paid by, you know, the municipality of that place. So the community never thought to ask. So this was happening frequently. It was happening frequently, and because some places are war zones, so there's a lot of death that's happening, right? There's a lot of death. So every second day, every day, somebody new is being buried, and then somebody from those people's family is coming back to the cemetery to come and water the graves, to come and check on the flowers, to come and do whatever rituals that they do. When they get there, it is tempered graves. So at some point, the people of that village or that town decided that they are going to do a protest to the councillor's office, or to the governor's office. They decided that they're going to do a protest, and they are going to complain, and they're going to be, telling the people that no, the graves are being tampered with, and we don't know what is happening there, and somebody must check it. The police must go and investigate, and the police must go and check what is happening to the graves, and they must put an undercover system, or they must put an undercover system where people are going inside. It's like police work, basically. Basically. And the police was like, yeah, but no, we have different things that we do. We are not the corpse police, you know, and this is because they are most deceased people. So they're not cadavers. Cadavers are for students. They are corpses because they are corpses. They are dead people inside coffins. Some inside coffins and some not inside coffins, because not every single person was of the coffin people. There are some people that get buried in coffins, and there are some people that don't get buried in coffins, like the Muslims, right? So after a while, people started being iffy about the cemetery, and they couldn't move their loved ones to other cemeteries and put them, because they didn't have this problem in other cemeteries. So each town usually has one cemetery, or if that one gets full, then they make another cemetery. But the other cemetery was not having this problem. It was only just this one. And it's like one day, it's like 50 graves. Like in a week, it's like 50 graves that have been tempered with. And in the next week, it's 10 graves. And every single new grave that's coming in is being tempered with. And people grew tired of it. And people tried to look for ways to figure out what was happening. So part of the story was that, Anueta Shituka. So it was a big story, because people that were walking past the cemetery, they used to hear voices of people talking in the night. They used to see flashlights, and they also used to see, like movement in the cemetery. Now, I don't know why people got skeptical, or people started believing that, ah, no, these are ghosts, when we know more. Skucha, we have people that we have put at the cemetery to take care of the cemetery, and part of their job in the cemetery is just to make sure that nothing is being vandalized. So they are walking around with flashlights, moss. Yeah, because you can't just walk in the cemetery without a flashlight, especially if it's your job. Your job is to take care of the cemetery at daytime and at night. So you are walking around at night most to make sure that nobody is cutting through the fence, so that they walk past. Nobody is doing what? Nobody's doing a moss. Eh. Folgens. Eh. Was full hands, but nobody asked these guys. So people were thinking that it's ghosts. People were thinking that it is some supernatural stuff, and people were thinking that it was ulingi lingi. And then there was a witch in the town There was a witch in the town, or somebody that was suspected of witchcraft in the town. And then, it so happened that that night, Mbera, she was walking past the cemetery or something like that. And then she looked like she was going into the cemetery. And then somebody from the town that was driving past started the rumor. Which, yeah, she's going inside there to go and cut people's ijaw out. And she's doing, organ trafficking. She's stealing people's livers and she's stealing people's what and all of that. And hey, people went crazy. People went to their house, to the lady's house. And she's like, no, me, I was just walking past. They're like, ah, no. Then who is messing with the graves? Who's messing with the graves there at the cemetery if it's not just you? Because as we know that you are a witch and you deal with these things. So part of the time, in that time, there were a few guys that were caught. They were caught with human remains. So they were caught with livers. They were caught with kidneys. They were caught with human remains, eyeballs, you know, just organs, you know, organs, except the skin. Because did you know that the skin is the biggest organ on a human body? Like, you didn't know that. So now you know. So now it's a conversation for tomorrow. Okay. So these guys were caught. They were caught in a little truck somewhere, Mbera. They were driving and there was a roadblock somewhere. And then the guy in the roadblock was like, what's in the cool box? And you know, when you're dealing with organs and stuff, it's things with blood and it has to be fresh. So, you know, when you're putting that liver inside the cool box, you throw it into the cool box and then you close the cool box and then your fingerprints with blood is just running down like this when you close the cool box. So they're like, yeah, but what's inside there? Like, do you have animals inside there? And they're like, ah, no, it's not. It's not animals. It's not what. And then the police opened and then they found human remains and these guys were arrested and then they were prosecuted and they were asked now, okay, so where did you get the human remains? And the police was most now expecting, because the problem was that the vandalism that was going on in the cemetery was intense. So everybody was very, very much aware of it. So when the human remains are found like that, we are expecting you to tell us the story of, oh, I go to cemeteries to go and steal, you know, to go and steal livers, to go and steal what, you know. These guys are like, no, the problem, where they got the human remains was the hospital. So it seemed like there was like a black market shandiki that was going on there at the hospital, at the mortuary. And the mortuary people were kind of like selling off people's organs. Yeah, they were selling off people's organs to these guys that were now taking them to get transplanted, you know, most. Because if you have a weak heart and there's a perfectly good heart here that is going into the sand for nothing, you know, then the people just, you know, affirmative repossession, like, it's going to an old guy or it's going to a young lady, you know, the other side, you know, we're doing the Lord's work. So they explained that this is what was happening. They had a deal with the hospital. So they didn't have a deal with the hospital. They had a deal with an official from the hospital and from the mortuary. So these guys were also caught and then they were prosecuted and that was it. So the graves, they were still being vandalized. Even when these guys were still in jail, the graves were still being vandalized. It was just business as usual there at the cemetery. The cemetery was just going wild as always. Ah! Then the police is like, fine. Okay. So, you know how UNAM has been asking, or UNAM came forward to look for cadavers, you know, look for cadavers to practice on, to study on. Cadavers are you donating your body to science? You donating your body to medicine when you pass away so that these kids can learn. Now, what happens in other countries is that your cadaver is preserved and it is basically preserved for as long as humanly possible, and they come and they just learn on you. So the first years when they have to go and see a liver, they just come and check you there at the mortuary, they open you up, and then they tell you that, oh yeah, the liver is over here, the kidney's over here, and this one has a what, and this one has a what, and then your body becomes like a textbook. So that's what they mean by cadavers, right? For you people that are like, yeah, me zimba the tuta the koko no, eh, tae kirongera ko me zimba the tu. Guys, it's like a textbook. Basically, your body becomes a textbook for those people in the school of medicine, you know, to, so that they can better assist you that is alive, that is going through something. They cannot practice on living people. They cannot practice taking out a liver successfully, eh, and putting it somewhere else on a living person. You are not most an experiment. That is a violation of you. So that is why they need cadavers. So in case you are wondering what your purpose is, maybe your purpose is to donate your body to science. Donate your body so that your body can be the textbook or for the next doctors and for the next morticians and for the next people that deal with our loved ones when they pass on. Maybe, just maybe, you can contribute your body like that. I'm just saying, because I'm thinking about it. I know my relatives will not allow, but I'm thinking about it. You know, maybe I'll put it in my will, you know, I'll put it in my will and then just tell them, me, you guys can have a finger. You guys can have a finger and then just, or you guys can just buy a casket and just have a whole ceremony without me there, because me, I'm going to be chilling at the morgue. So there was a university that was close by that was notoriously known for stealing corpses, because they used to steal corpses. It was back in the day, man. It was not so back in the day, but it was like early 90s towards the 2000s. They used to steal bodies for science. So they wait for you guys to go and bury your loved ones, and they go and dig your loved ones out, and then they take them to the mortuary so that them they can study. But it sounds very wrong when we say it, or because it's most stealing of a corpse, violation of a corpse. There's so many things that go like into that crime. Even when you're convicted, there's, you don't get one charge. It's like five charges. Yeah. Indecent transportation of a corpse, because when a corpse is being transported, it must be in a coffin, and there are so many laws around corpses. Corpses are allowed to be respected. They're allowed to be treated with dignity. And everything that you do to a corpse is undignified if it is outside the consensual part. So there was a university close by that was notoriously known for, or allegations for, stealing corpses, because they always had corpses, even when they didn't have corpses. So this university, the police decides to make a sting operation to see if they are really stealing cadavers. I'm telling you, the mortuary, nobody told them anything. The mortuary was quiet for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month. Sting operation was just not stinging. Nothing was happening there. So they ruled the university out as tampering with graves. They ruled them out because the students were all coming to class. They didn't have a cadaver. They were just watching these cadaver videos where the lecturer is teaching them mar just from projectors. There's no corpse in front of them. There's just nothing like that. And the police realized, which I know, these guys are not doing anything in the cemetery. They are not tampering with the graves. But now, who's tampering with the graves? So one day, a police inspector, you know, or somebody, detective somebody, he decides that, you know what, I'm going to sit at the cemetery, man. Because the thing is that it becomes alarming. It might seem like it's not too serious until it happens all the time, and it becomes something that is unsettling. It becomes something that is messing with your psyche, and it's messing with your community. It becomes bad. It's like having criminals that are terrorizing your vicinity, and eventually you have to do something about it. Do you remember once upon a time we as a city, we had Boko Haram that was terrorizing the whole entire Karutura, my dear. Boko Haram was quickly dispensed. Why? It's because somebody just grew tired of the nonsense that was happening here, and we are cutting this operation quickly. So it was the same thing. So these detectives and these police officers, they decided, like, you know what? Let's sit, man, at the cemetery. Let's sit and let's wait and see what is happening. So it's around midnight, and these guys, they want to stretch their legs because now they've been sitting in the car with sting operation, was night vision goggles, you know, this flashlight that flashes like at least like 1 kilometer, you know, my gadgets, man. So they've been sitting in the car since 9 o'clock, and it's 12 o'clock in the night. And so let's go and stretch our legs. Let's just walk through the cemetery to see if there's anything that's happening, because it's an everyday thing, you know, every day graves are being violated. Every day graves are being vandalized. And it's not vandalism per se. It's just, the sand that you put there is not the sand that you find there. It's not the flowers that you put there is not the flowers you find there. Even if you find the flowers there, they are dirty and they are what? But last night there was no rain and there was no wind. And so what is this? You know, it's just unsettling. Ewa, sharp. So these guys decide to go into the cemetery. They go into the cemetery, and them, they are wearing most now their night vision things and their what. So it's just them walking through the park, you know, just ordinary day vibes, walking through the park. And at some point, right, they see like a little car light. They see a little car light and they're like, "Ay, what's that?" Then they decide to dispense and then move in closer. When they moved in closer like this, they realized that, there was movement, man. There's movement here, and what is happening there? Okay. So they move closer and they move closer. And you know how a grave is dug? You know how a grave is dug? Like, a grave is dug. Yeah. I'm out here scaring myself. You know how a grave is dug for somebody a day in advance, or, you know, a couple of hours, day in advance, so that if you are building like cement inside the grave or something, then you have an opportunity to do that. So they found like there was the sand of the grave was outside, like next to the grave. And then the grave was entirely dug out. Then the grave was entirely dug out, and there was like that heap of sand over here. And then there's like a lapi, like a cloth, but it's like a dirty cloth, you know, because some people, like Muslims, they don't bury in coffins, because we spoke about it. They want to bury their loved ones in cloths. So, and then they hide them like in a corner, and then they put a plank, because they don't deal with anything that is made like from fire. So it will hinder the afterlife process of their loved ones. So some of the graves, or some of the corpses that were inside the graves, were wrapped in blankets, like white blankets. So now the police noticed that there's a white blanket, but it's now not pure white. You know, it's dirty. And mind you, there's most now also the ritual of watering graves. So that means this grave is constantly wet. Even in the midst of summer, it is constantly wet. Hence why the cloth is dirty, muddy. Ow. So they notice like, there's a cloth over here. There's like this white blanket, and there's now the incense, and there's the flowers, and the everything that they put within their rituals, right? And they notice the blanket, and then they hear sounds, right? And they're like, like, ha. So they noticed like there are a few sounds. But then also what they noticed was that there's a tombstone. Now with the Muslims, right, they don't put on just any tombstone, because we go back to what? The concept? They go back to the things that are made out of fire must not be put onto Muslim people's graves, right? Religiously. Those are religious beliefs, right? So their tombstones are different. They are completely different from you and I's tombstones, because ours are most made in a factory somewhere or in somebody's backyard. With them, it's like a specific stone, a specific writing. It's chiseled in. It's something like that. So they notice that, yeah, no, but there's a tombstone. So the only graves that have tombstones are graves of people that have already been put in the tombstones. Not unless you are Merusa has a whole grave already written, date of birth and what she wants on her grave, and she's just waiting to chila so she can go inside her shandy, you know. Not unless, but in this case, the tombstone is already here, and this grave is dug out like somebody is going to go inside tomorrow, and there's a blanket over here, and now we are hearing sounds. And it was just not adding up. It was not adding up. It was just not... How? It was not adding up. So they go and they further do investigations, and then they go behind. Now when they went behind, like just a little bit behind the trees, what? Guess what they find? They get there and... The man is Pieser Brur. Eh? Raj. So you remember this most wizard and Raj. These two are the grounds maintenance guys of the cemetery. So these two guys, they live in the cemetery, in an apartment in the cemetery, paid for by the governor's office or whoever regulates graveyards. So now these two guys are the ones that walk around the cemetery with the flashlight and all of that most volgens. And I don't know, this had gone on for 10 years. This was year 10, right? When this unveiling came. So now Raj. Mangeke. Raj is busy, friend. Then the police come with the flashlight. Kuchaye, who said, what machi? Is Raj in pure, absolute bliss? He's making pata pata. He's doing pata pata. The dengo shim of a corpse. Omte say that Raj was practicing necrophilia. So he's a necrophiliac. A necrophilia is somebody that is sexually attracted to corpses, sexually attracted to dead people. So now it makes sense, right? Kucha, before the body, because the only graves that were being violated, right, were freshly dug graves. It was just nuance. Yeah, it was just your person dies today, and then tomorrow the grave is violated. Kanti, the older graves were never violated. The older graves were never violated because those bodies have decomposed, right? Now, these ones, Kanti, these guys, when they are sitting there at the cemetery, right, they are just waiting, which, oh, these people, they are bringing in fresh meat from Dach. Yeah, they are bringing in fresh meat. God dang, Oshima. They are bringing in fresh meat today, so they even pinpoint which graves are new and which graves are not new, and sex with corpses, you know. So this Raj guy was found having sex with a corpse, and he was found very busy. So when the flashlight just went on like that, it was also just climax time. Says, so as climax time, but it was just a mess. So now the people are, whoo, you know, it's like, are these two dead people, or who changed? What is this? You know, because like, what? Like, is it two corpses came out of graves to just do it for the last time kind of vibes? Like, how? And that's when they realize that no, one is alive and one is dead. And that's also when they realize that the only graves that have been violated are graves of women. So he was a straight guy that appreciated women corpses. So he's necrophiliac, but straight, you know, because a lot of necrophiliacs are not, they don't really discriminate between genders, you know, or wherever we can put it, I guess. Yeah. So this guy gets arrested and this guy is being asked like, hey, how, who raised you? Hey, did you grow up in a cemetery? Everybody's wondering, kucha, who's that? Like, what happened? This guy tells us like, no. So the thing is, when I first came here, right, I was an absolutely normal guy. And then Wizard used to disappear and then he'll come back like muddy and dirty and stuff. And then one day I found him doing this. And then I was like shocked, like, oh, Wizard, how can you do that? That's a corpse. That's a dead person. People don't do that. Wizard was like, just try it, brah. You might like it. And he's like, oh, okay, I'm going to try it. Bam, I became a necrophiliac. Not really my fault, because Wizard was not supposed to encourage me to try this. Hello, what? Wait, what? What? Okay, so where's Wizard? And he's like, no, a Wizard had gone to another place to go and live there at the other place. Which other place? Is he still employed here at the cemetery? Like, yeah, he's still employed. Okay, so he went to live at another place where? Tot vandaag toe, my dear. Nobody has ever seen this Wizard guy. Nobody even knows Wizard. Shitty. Like you said, his name is what? Wizard. Eh. What is his surname? Hashish. Wizard Hashish. Well, shitty police is looking even at Home Affairs. Kucha, Wizard Hashish. Kucha, we are looking all over Pakistan. We are looking all over for this Wizard guy. But there's no record of this Wizard. So what people are thinking is that this guy, ever since he came into the town, ne? He's just been doing this, but there was no actual record of him being employed by the city or the place. So this money that, no, he's not a ghost. He's not a ghost. He's a real life person, because even in his interview, he was being interviewed. The guy is being interviewed. There's, even from the story, which I know we met with Wizard in a bar and what. There's just no Wizard anywhere. And Wizard just doesn't exist. So my theory, or our theory as a collective, is that onomo kabesa kamuno, like, there are a few screws loose this side. So they suspect that he might have had a mental disorder on top of being a necrophiliac. So he made up an imaginary friend called Wizard to come and stay with him in the cemetery to blame all his things for. Because him, when he was found in the dirt, everything, pants closed down, took off everything just to have, you know, one more rodeo or a couple of rodeos, because it's like 10 graves being violated in one day. And I'm like, around. I'm just saying. So he's arrested and he's being asked like, why did you do it? And he's like, no, it's just Wizard taught me. And he said, it's fine. So it's like, so he was arrested and then he was sentenced to life, and now people's corpses are not being violated anymore. But prior to him being caught, there was also a picture that was circulating around social media where, a family had buried, apparently, allegedly, buried a daughter, and they didn't want her to be violated and they didn't want her grave to be violated. So they had put a padlock on the grave and they were saying, yes, this is in Pakistan. Yes, this is at this particular graveyard. And yes, this is what, but it so happened that the image was real. But it was not in Pakistan, it was in India. And it was a senior lady that was buried there. And the reason that the family had put a padlock on the woman's grave is that the cemetery in itself or the morticians or whoever's responsible for burying people had started a tendency of burying strangers into holes that are already occupied, into graves that are already occupied. And they as a family made it a collective decision to preserve Nana's grave by putting a padlock to it. But all in all, that was the story of Raj. So Raj basically was a necrophiliac and he was patapataing corpses there in the cemetery, left, right and center. But my question was, if the city or the office, right, has a record of people that work, or they have a job for people that work in the cemetery, wouldn't it be logical for us, the bereaved loved ones, to go and ask the people responsible for taking care of the cemetery why our graves are being violated? Nobody. 10 years. Nobody asked these guys. They could see that there's like a 2-bedroom flat there in the cemetery somewhere. They could even see the people that are walking around maybe to go and get a bit of water. They knew the people that were working there. They knew the person. They saw one person only. They knew the person was working there. They knew he would even wear, like, you know, most GRN. You know, if you are working GRN or City of Windhoek, you know, he was wearing uniform and stuff like that. They knew that this was the person that lives at the cemetery to safeguard. Nobody. 10 years. Nobody asked that guy anything. No one. Everybody went to the media. Everyone went to the police. Everyone went everywhere. Except to the guy that's actually doing it. No one. Now, me, I would ask Moss, like, can your child get injured at school and then you can go and ask the people at the shop what happened to your child? No, Moss. You ask the teachers and the principal and the school people. You ask the kids there at the school. It must happen there. Now, I don't know. I think it's also maybe because people are generally afraid of people that deal with death. So people don't really have mortician friends because they are afraid of death, because we have this tendency of being afraid of the afterlife. And that is why we ask stupid questions like, what happened? Oh, patriarch died. What happened? So that we can avoid dying like matriarch did. Because low-key in our minds, we are thinking like, if I can just avoid cancer, then if I can just avoid car accidents, if I can just know what killed her, then maybe I can preserve myself if I'm ever in a situation like that. That's why we ask. Eh? Kucha? So, what happened to telephone? Telephone passed away. What happened? So that we know what happened. So that was the story of Raj, guys. The necrophiliac. So much necrophilia happens. And many of us are not exposed enough to know that there are necrophiliacs living amongst us. Hey. So that was all she wrote, ladies and gentlemen. From me, the matriarch, I I, the matriarch, I bid you guys farewell. I love you forever and a day. You are important to me. Tomorrow we meet here again at 9 o'clock in the evening all the way to midnight, ladies and gentlemen. I say farewell, farewell, farewell. And if you're going to go into your soft girl era, ladies and gents, if you're going to go into your soft girl era, at least make sure that your partner also knows that you're going into your soft girl era. Because how? Just imagine your personal person just waking up one day and you just resigned. I'm going into my soft girl era. I don't want to work anymore. I just want to stay home and do my nails. Did you consult me? No, you're supposed to be a provider. How? No. All right, my beloved. I love you. Ciao, ciao.
Mukungulele kwa tuko maikuto wami na apiri kwa mavucha aziva. Muvele kisema ep ato kasi nchavu kamso. Zakare, riferire. Mise kunani, zencha. Kuzwa kwa kushimba.